The Evidence of Tradition. No one will deny that in the 12th century marriage was regarded as a sacrament by both the Western and Eastern churches, and even by schismatical and heretical sects. In 1181, the Council of Verona proclaimed that marriage is a sacrament. If marriage was regarded as a sacrament after the Great Eastern Schism, which divided East and West, it must have been regarded as a sacrament before the schism. Photius, the usurping patriarch of Constantinople, broke from Rome in 867, and Cerularius, a patriarch of the same city, in 1053. The final break came in 1472. For there never was an argument about this matter connected with the East-West split. The Western Church certainly never got the idea from the Eastern, and the Eastern Church certainly did not copy it from the Western. The only other alternative is that each side adopted the idea independently, which would be absurd because if either of them had done so, it would have been exposed to the severest criticisms from the other side. Hence, if the notion that marriage is a sacrament was adopted by the church, it must have been before the earliest of the schismatic churches detached itself from Rome. But there is not the slightest evidence of such a change taking place. The early church was most conservative, and if any individual, or party, or diocese, or community had tried to introduce a new sacrament, there would certainly have been a protest, of which we would surely find some evidence today. On the contrary, all the evidence we have is that the early church always regarded marriage as a sacrament. St. Augustine called it a sacrament in many a passage. Quote, "It is certain," he says, "that a sacrament is recommended to believers in wedlock when the apostle says, 'You who are husbands must show love to your wives, as Christ showed love to the church.' Of this sacrament, the substance undoubtedly is that the man and the woman who are joined together in wedlock should remain inseparable as long as they live. De nuptialis et concupiscentia, 1:10. Quote, "The excellence of marriage is threefold, faithfulness, offspring, sacrament." De Genesis ad lit. 9:7. St. Ambrose wrote, quote, "We also do not deny that marriage was sanctified by Christ." Epistulus 19:7. Elsewhere he calls it a heavenly sacrament. De Abraham 1:7. Tertullian, while still a Catholic, wrote that marriage, quote, "enjoys the protection of divine grace." Ad Uxorem 2:7. A little further on, he speaks of marriage as being ratified by the church and sealed with a blessing. Of even greater weight than these testimonies of the fathers is the evidence of the most ancient liturgical books. From these, it can be gathered that since earliest times, prayers were used at the marriage ceremony that referred to the special graces granted to the newly married persons. The contract. The external sign which constitutes the sacrament of matrimony is simply the valid contract made by a man and woman to live together as husband and wife. Whenever a contract or agreement to live as husband and wife is validly made by Christians, it is a sacrament and causes grace. If there is no valid contract, there is no sacrament. Thus, the external consent, usually expressed in words, to the mutual agreement to live as husband and wife, is both the matter and the form of the sacrament. In every sacrament, it is the minister who uses the matter and form, which together make up the outward sign. In marriage, the outward sign is made by the contracting parties themselves. Therefore, they are the ministers of the sacrament. From this it follows that in certain exceptional cases provided for in church law, marriage can be contracted and the sacrament received without the presence of a priest. Moreover, non-Catholics, provided they are validly baptized and have no dirimant impediments to the marriage, normally receive the sacrament validly, for they are definitely excluded from the canon law which requires the presence of a parish priest at their wedding. The graces of Christian marriage. The special graces given to worthy recipients of the sacrament of matrimony enable them to bear the difficulties of their state, to love and be faithful to one another, and to bring up their children in the fear of God. What these three headings cover is a matter of common experience. Differences of temper and disposition, poverty and want of work, bad habits, ill health, difficulties in the characters of the children, jealousies, etc. What a pity, then, that marriage can rightly be called the forgotten sacrament, because so many of those who receive it scarcely think of it afterwards, and very often fail to ask God to bestow the very graces through it that they need. Marriage ruled by the Church. If marriage is a sacrament, it must be directly under the power of the Church. Of course, marriage has certain purely civil aspects which do not touch its essence, e.g., the amount of the dowry, rights of succession to property, etc. With these, the Church has no wish to interfere. But apart from these, everything pertaining to marriage must be regulated by the Church. It is a right that has always been claimed and used by ecclesiastical authority, which has often insisted on enforcing legislation completely at variance with the civil laws. Quote, "To decree and ordain concerning the sacrament is, by the will of Christ himself, so much a part of the power and duty of the Church, that it is plainly absurd to maintain that even the smallest fraction of such power has been transferred to the civil ruler. Among Christians, every true marriage is, in itself and by itself, a sacrament, and nothing can be further from the truth than to say that the sacrament is an added ornament or outward endowment which can be separated and torn away from the contract at the caprice of man." Pope Leo XIII, Encyclical Arcanum. Thus, divorce laws which interfere with the substance and essential properties of marriage are regarded by the Church as an unwarranted interference with her rights.